Chapter 5. Finally, some good news. Lieutenant Greer had reported that Specialist Armbruster had returned to base, seemingly unharmed, meaning that at least one of her scout patrol had survived. The eccentric warrior had point-blank refused to talk to anyone, and had set about rearming his hunter for redeployment. That had been about 30 minutes ago. There would be time to mourn Almeida and the others later, but they would be a step closer to forming a feasible plan to combating this civil uprising when they were back in a relatively secure environment. They would not be caught short again. Greer had also reported that he had gained communications with Central, and that they had ordered Colonel Rome to return to command at once, with all urgency and with the necessary escort. The remainder of the base was set to remain in situ and wait for further orders. Blake wasn't happy about losing some of her troops to escort the colonel back, but understood the necessity of having him be where he could do the most good. Rome had, of course, insisted that he and Major Trask would be fine. Besides, they had two of the finest war machines ever built to carry them through the city. But Blake, embracing her role as his advisor, had told him to shut up and stop being so stupid. The orders were to provide an escort, so provide an escort she would. Something big was happening, and Central was remaining frustratingly tight-lipped about it. They needed all the help they could get. Even now, Blake could see flashes in the distance, dull glows that gently lit up the sky, sometimes followed by a rumbling. Garbled fragments of messages had come through about the orbital guns being under attack, of them firing, and that alone was enough to send a chill up Blake's spine. She carefully watched the skies, saw no telltale signatures of super-heavy shells leaving the city. The anti-air batteries, however, were another story. They lit up the sky, puffs of light and smoke adding illumination to the dim rocket trails falling onto the city in the distance. "Who's hitting us with rockets?" Blake wondered. "One of the other cities?" Surely not. Then she had another thought. Maybe they aren't rockets. Eddie shuddered in sympathy, and she had to compensate to stop herself from falling over. She had to come to terms with the fact that the revolution, usually spoken of in jest, after all, how could that unwashed Corvid rabble organise anything remotely threatening, may actually be occurring. She feared for the great leader. Blake had no frame of reference for this. Else, Rome had no frame of reference for a revolutionary war. She wanted the best information, and believed that it was proper for her troops to know what could be coming. Blake chewed her bottom lip as Eddie rounded a corner, and the base gates loomed, beckoning the platoon to enter. Against her better judgment, she transmitted on the squad net. "First squad, this is Eddie, over."
"First squad, go ahead,"
came Kronig's monotone response. "You fought in the last war, Sergeant Kronig. How did it start?"
"Ed, are you sure?"
Rome started. He'd had the same reservations as her. Many officers believed it best to keep everything on a need-to-know basis. There was no sense in causing a collapse of morale by voicing unbaked theories and presumptions, but for once, Blake didn't agree. She decided to put faith into the intelligence of her troops. The broad strokes of the uprising were taught at the officer academy, but it was all propaganda, coloured as a mighty victory for the true loyalists, overthrowing their corrupt dictator to usher in a new age of prosperity. The minutiae of the individual chain of events were glossed over. Evidently, the establishment was paranoid of their officer cadre getting any bright ideas. "Yes, I'm sure," Blake responded bluntly. "We need to know what we're getting into here."
"It happened much like this, boss, but the other way around. Army units started leaving their posts, and it was the civvies that rose up to try and stop us. The last leader was massively popular with the people."
"But what did you do specifically? Where did you strike?" There was a long silence, and Blake could practically hear Kronig's mind drawing parallels with recent events.
"We jammed city radio on all frequencies to sow confusion. Our units had been given individual missions that required no greater overview. It had been in planning for years, and we could operate with outcomes."
Kronig sighed.
"We then sabotaged the gate grid to allow ease of movement, as well as denying access to the enemy. It's on a separate network from the city power, so it would remain operational in case of a complete shutdown."
Blake shuddered before she interjected. "Then you took the orbital guns.
Then we took the orbital guns. Kronig confirmed, after a pause.
What did you do after that?
The feeling of dread had wormed its way through her whole body now. We stormed Central Command and executed the leader while the city was too busy dealing with the chaos of army units running wild to organize anything to stop us.
Shit, Blake thought. What's Central keeping from us?
Captain Blake decided there and then that upon returning to base, she would petition to Central to relocate her entire company to District Command. It made no sense for every subunit to be an island, waiting to be picked off by the numerically superior separatists. She was willing to lose ground, if it meant being alive to retake it at a later date.
Boss, Anna Morante said from up front. This isn't no riot that's got out of hand, is it?
It wasn't phrased as a question.
No, Corporal Morante, she replied. I don't think it is.
Look, there it is. That big gate welcoming us home.
Kinney was chatting incessantly over a subchannel.
As soon as we get you back in, I'll get the ops room to get a doctor sent over. You'll be patched up in no time.
He didn't believe a word of it.
Bader had been dropping behind steadily. His Mog stumbled sluggishly behind the patrol and they had to keep stopping to allow him to catch up.
Kinney cursed the system. There were no recovery vehicles at Sector 78. It had been deemed of such low importance that if they'd experienced breakdowns, they usually just left the mech in place with a guard overnight until a recovery wagon could be scrambled from District in the morning. That would not do right now. There was a man dying in there, and Kinney was waffling at him to keep him conscious.
You still with me, brother?
There was a long pause. Bader had opened the mic. He could hear him breathing, but he took a long time to talk back.
I'm good off. You don't have to worry about me.
There was a definite slur to his words now.
I'm the one supposed to look after you, remember?
We look after each other, he said, eyeing the back of Kronig's big Mog in distaste. We're soldiers. For now. The best Kinney could figure, they'd have to get a mechanic to cut him free from his mongoose, then try and make him comfortable while they waited for a doctor. But the likelihood of that happening out in the sticks was minimal. Medical personnel were in short supply, and if the captain was to be believed, they were at the fringes of some major uprising. Kinney was half considering just jacking it all in right there, dropping from the patrol to go find his brother and join the right side. The only trouble was, if he did that, Bader would follow him and most certainly die. At least back at base they had drugs and basic medical training. The Corvids would probably just abandon him, providing he didn't die on the way there. No. For now he was stuck in the system. One that he had grown to dislike more and more over the events of the evening.
Ops, this is Eddie. Get that gate open. We're on approach. Over.
Blake crackled over the net. That damned interference had lessened, but it was still present, limiting their communications to short-range VHF radios.
Roger, opening now, came the barely workable response.
The heavily armoured gate shifted on oiled rollers and began to slide out of the way when a piercing squeal of feedback blasted across the radio.
Ah, shit! Kinney exclaimed.
The whole platoon had stopped dead, such was the impact of the noise. It felt like needles being forced into his ears, and Kinney hurriedly turned the volume down on his radio.
Can anyone hear me? He sent over the net.
Nothing. He switched to the command channel and tried again.
Nothing.
Kinney tried channel hopping, setting his radio to random frequencies, but it was all the same, a persistent screech that invaded the mind and made it hard to think. Then it cut out.
Welcome, Brigador, said a voice with peculiar inflection.
It was synthesized, utterly inhuman, sounding how Kinney would imagine a mech would speak if it had a mind of its own.
What in the hells is this?
Great leader has died. Solo Nobre must fall. Here is your contract.
The voice went on to detail the objectives of a corporation calling itself the SNC. The young private sat in silence, as it said the population should destroy vital infrastructure, disable the orbital guns, and overrun military outposts. The contract was open to everyone, regardless of rank or social status. Kinney didn't even have to sign anything. Action alone would be enough to be granted generous compensation.
Great Leader is dead. How is this possible? His mind reeled. The Great Leader was an immovable rock, regarded as practically a living saint by the older generations. He was rarely seen outside of Central. He spent all his time buttoned up in the most secure location on the planet, yet the corporation had got to him. It was happening, Kinney realized. It was really happening. The Corvid dream of breaking the blockade, opening lines of communication with the corporations and reintegrating into the galaxy at large, all was within grasp. Kinney moved slowly back towards the city, taking a single step.
Oof, what's going on?
Don't worry. It's okay, brother. Everything's okay, Kinney told his old friend.
I take it everybody heard that, Morante said over the squad net.
Nobody replied.
What do we do now?
Kinney was expecting Kronig to come growling across, telling them to carry on back to base and carry on as normal, to shut up and follow orders or whatever. But his not-a-mog just stood there, immobile. It seemed even the officers were at a loss for words. Neither of them had spoken since the transmission ended. At least the interference had gone.
Eddie, this is Ops. Did you hear that?
Kinney recognized Lieutenant Greer's voice. There was a commotion. Major Trask was yelling in the background. Something about getting Rome to Central right now. And he was back on.
Eddie, Ops, that's what I was telling you about before you left. The message on the bulletin boards. It's the same contract.
Blake replied this time.
Did it mention anything about the Great Leader before?
A pause.
No, that's new. We don't know what to make of it. Central isn't replying either way.
Again, Major Trask acting delirious in the background.
Ops, this is Wolf Mother, Colonel Rome said sternly before the big machine started walking again.
Tell Major Trask to calm down. I'm fine. We'll figure things out when we get back in. In the meantime, we'll carry out our last known orders.
He walked past Second Squad, impatient to get back inside.
Shock started to wear away, and the rest of the platoon started to shuffle forward, all sense of formation lost. It seemed as though everyone was lost in their own thoughts and just blindly following on. Only Kinney remained still. As Bader limped past, his pain evident even in the stride of his armored machine, he was paralyzed, unable to move. The revolution was real. All the stuff he'd been brought up to believe was happening in his lifetime, tonight, right now. But he couldn't just abandon Steve Bader. He watched Wolfmother pass the front gate up ahead, the stylized heads running up its flank armor now partially blackened and flaking away, and came to a decision. That was when the base exploded.